Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful!
Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown!
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
I'm thinking like any off-season venture, gentlemen, including here on Cardinals Underground, azcardinals.com, maybe we should take roll just to be sure. You know, there's a lot of changes in the off-season. Let's just make absolutely sure who's here and who isn't going into 2012, our first official gathering here on the podcast, Cardinals Underground. Let's start Paulie Pencilneck, Paulie Pigskin. I'm most definitely here. Let's see. Was Darren Urban a cap casualty? Darren, drum roll.
I'm here. Yes.
You are here. Yes. Okay. Ron Wolfley, are you still with us?
Check.
I see. By the way, where are we, Darren, exactly? This is like part NFL Films Library.
Yes.
Part Cinderblock Bunker. Part Ohm's dorm room and flag, part utility closet.
Yeah, where are we right now? Part closet, yeah.
This is actually the safe room of the facility
building. Yeah, really.
This is the safe room right here. There are no windows, of course. If something funky ever happens with Palo Verde, I am coming here to the safe room.
Okay, speaking of role, here we go, Darren. Calais yes. Campbell, here, check. At least one more year, right? The latest got tagged, correct?
Yeah, he got franchise tagged, and there's not a whole lot new, as far as I know, in terms of the contract talks. I mean, there still seems to be this optimism that at some point a long-term deal will be done. But, you know, I think it's – I don't think it's quite as easy as everybody thinks it's going to be. And I thought once we got to this point, it probably wouldn't. I'm guessing he's expecting – a pretty monumental contract, and there's a lot of talk out there in general, not just with Calais, but you know, when the cap might be going up, when it's not going up. A lot of stuff in the news over the next couple of years over you know, how the cap is going to stay flat, which is going to affect a lot of teams, because let's face it, all the contracts that are being done right now or have been done already, you know, the last couple of years, if they keep going, you know, guys get raises over the years. And if your cap is flattening out, that makes it tougher for anybody else to get raises. And I think that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes. Let's not forget, it's great that the lockout ended and that all got done. But the bottom line is the end result of the lockout, the biggest end result of the lockout was the players got less money. And the players getting less money meant the salary cap was going to flatten out. And it meant, at least in the short term, and it makes contracts, you know, bigger contracts getting done harder because of maneuvering that cap.
Levi Brown, Wolf, as you know, you want to start a you know, 2-hour conversation with a Cardinal fan, just drop the words Levi Brown. Yeah. Well, guess what? Here, he re-signed. Were you surprised at that? I know you've talked a lot about Levi Brown.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised that Levi Brown re-signed here, because I thought somebody probably would offer him more money than what the Arizona Cardinals were willing to offer him. You always covet what you don't want, and the grass is always greener on the other side. You have those two axioms working together here. It's one of the reasons why we see as much movement as we've seen in free agency. But, you know, to me, overall, you talk to Russ Grimm, and Russ Grimm will tell you that over the last half of last season, Levi Brown was the best offensive lineman on the team. That's what he felt. And he's always contended that Levi Brown is, in fact, the best run blocker the Arizona Cardinals have. So, you know, to me, I think the Cardinals are going to be a little bit more balanced, maybe, or at least start that way, move that way, this season coming up. And when I say that again, it's not going to be about how many times you run the ball as opposed to how many times you're throwing it. It's not that kind of balance. It's also when you run the ball that is so critical, and how you run it, and are you effective when you run the football? So I think there's going to be a movement back to being more effective when you rush the football. Not just, 26 rushing attempts, 26 pass attempts. That's not what I'm talking about here. I just think there's going to be a movement back to running the football a little bit more than what we've maybe seen in the past. And because of that, I think Levi Brown became a little bit more valuable. Now, the one thing I will say is I wonder if a scenario isn't out there where Levi Brown gets back over to the right side, the right tackle gets kicked over there, and then maybe in this year's draft coming up, the Arizona Cardinals select a left tackle in the draft. Now, at 13, I think you'd be reaching. At 13, I think you'd be reaching. But that brings up another scenario to me. You wonder if the Arizona Cardinals may consider trading down in the first round, where they know they can get a left tackle, know they can get a guy that physically will be able to hold up there, even though he's going to be a rookie, and then, of course, maybe even pick up a second-round pick in the process.
I think that's a very valid point. I think it's important to note. I think, and I, nobody's told me this, but given what happened the first time when they drafted Levi, and I know they're not drafting quite that high this time in the first round, I think there's got to be a sense of we don't want to take a tackle, especially, and have it mirror the same thing. You know, there's going to be pressure on whoever the first round pick is, and you take some guy at 13, and I'm just throwing a name out there right now, but you take a Jonathan Martin and you say, let's hopefully he's the left tackle or something, and he struggles, then it's going to be really hard to get away from people wanting to compare that to the Levi Brown situation. And I think that's the hesitation. I have heard what you've talked about with Levi on the right side. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, I talked to Levi when he re-signed. He made it very clear to me that he wants to play left tackle.
He said that before, Darren. He said that years ago, too.
And he doesn't... He's not saying he won't play right tackle, but he definitely wants to play left tackle. And you look at how some of this stuff lines up. You know, some of these other tackles that might be coming out, whether you take them at 13 or 20. I mean, if Riley Reiff comes from Iowa, happens to drop that far, a lot of people think he'd be more suited as a right tackle. A Cordy Glenn is more suited as a right tackle. Now, Martin's more of a left tackle. But again, you know, I think they're going to keep their options open with Levi on the side he plays, depending on what else is they have.
One of the other options that they have because of Adam Snyder is the fact that they could take Levi Brown, leave him at left tackle. And I know people are all up in arms over that. You know, you've got to be kidding me. Levi Brown is going to be back out there at left tackle. Don't forget, over the last 9 games, this team went 7-2 with Levi Brown as their left tackle. Okay, and that is the exact time frame that guys that I have a great deal, the utmost respect for, like Russ Grimm, will point to and say he really played great over the last half of the season. And they want him to be more consistent. There's no denying that. But I think Levi is turned into a bit of an urban legend. He's got the reputation, and there's nobody you can blame but Levi Brown for the reputation of being a guy that will give up sacks, being a guy, and he did. The first part of the season, he had a bad first part of the season. He really struggled out there, gave up a lot of sacks, gave up a lot of hits in the first half of the season. And he's earned that reputation. There's no denying, but he's not nearly as bad as most people will make him out to be. It's like, how bad is Levi Brown has taken on this life of its own, okay? And again, that's his own fault. But if you put Levi Brown at left tackle, and if he could play like he did over the last half of last year, and then you take Adam Snyder even, and maybe kick Adam Snyder out to right tackle. That's a position he can play. He can play right tackle. He's played all 5 positions, as a matter of fact. But maybe you could take him, move him out to right tackle, and then draft a guard even, like a David DeCastro at number 13. And I really love Dave DeCastro. The guy is a technician, the kid out of Stanford, played with Jonathan Martin, of course. That guy is a technician. They look at him and they say, this guy reminds us of Steve Hutchinson. That is a lofty comparison right there. And the kid also has a mean streak in him, which I love.
If he's anything like Steve Hutchinson, that means a decade of like Pro Bowl caliber play on the O-line. I mean, that's what that means if he's anything like Steve Hutchinson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, you know, there's a lot thrown out there, and you guys know you deal with it on a daily basis on Levi, and you always hear the number 5 pick in the draft. Well, guess what? We're 5 years into his career now. Let's just leave that out of the equation. Either he can play or he can't. Either he's a starter or he's not. I mean, just to me, we're now at the point, take the number five pick out of the equation, because I think that's part of the lightning rod that makes him this urban legend.
Yes.
I agree. I agree with you, but I will say this in defending those out there that want to complain. I feel like, the Adrian Peterson thing gets thrown out every once in a while, but for the most part, people just feel like he can't play. And they're not bringing up the draft pick. They just don't want to see him in there anymore. That's the sense I'm getting from the people that I hear from.
And the only argument I have to that is you really need to stop and think that maybe, just maybe, if you're one of those people that feel that way, D, maybe you don't really know the whole story. Maybe you don't, because logically, I think you could look at Levi Brown and say, let's see, does Russ Grimm want to lose? Does Ken Whisenhunt want to lose? If he's as bad as this urban legend has made him out to be, and again, he's earned the reputation. I'm not trying to make an argument. I'm not trying to defend Levi Brown here. I was surprised that he re-signed here. But if he was as bad as people say that he is, why in the world would Ken Whisenhunt and Russ Grimm, whose jobs are on the line because of winning or losing, why would they re-sign Levi Brown? It doesn't make sense because they want to win worse than any fan that is out there, because their livelihood depends on it.
Well, I said something along those lines when he first resigned, that they put their money where their mouth was, because they kept saying that he was playing better. And, you know, let's face it, sometimes things are said by coaches and higher ups, and sometimes it's lip service to get through a season, to get to the end, to kind of pawn it off. But let's face it, they said he was playing better, and then they brought him back. I mean, that really underscores the fact that they really believe that. I also think this, and I've often thought this, and people get tired of me saying this, but look, the bottom line is, in a quarterback-driven league, you have good quarterback play, you have smart quarterback play, you have quick quarterback play in terms of getting the ball out. Your offensive line looks better. And I'm going to go back to, there are, in my opinion, there are much fewer good offensive tackles in this league than there are average to below average. And many of those average to below average tackles play on teams like, the New York Giants that just won the Super Bowl. But if you have a quarterback who's making the right decisions and can make quick decisions and know what he's doing, it changes the equation. And I'm not excusing anything for any alignment or Levi or anything. But to me, it's not even a chicken or the egg thing. Clearly, it starts with a quarterback, and then it filters to the offensive line. That's just my opinion.
And the free agent market this year for tackles was absolutely awful.
Right.
Awful. And, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about that, because we all know about Peyton Manning. Oh, have we talked about Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning played behind a very average offensive line for 14 years. He had one real pro bowler that was a pro bowler, I believe I said right there. You might want to edit that, Ohms. Jeff Saturday, he was his center. Of course, Tarik Glenn is a guy that gets a lot of... But Tarik Glenn was, he was okay. Peyton Manning got the ball out quickly, okay? And not only that, never forget this. Defensive coordinators were loath to blitz Peyton Manning. They did not want to come after Peyton Manning. The Indianapolis Colts offensive line saw more three-man rushes with eight dropped off and more four-man rushes with seven dropped off than probably any other team in the NFL. You blitz Peyton Manning at your own peril. Well, if you're not coming with a bunch of complicated blitzes, and if you're not coming with a bunch of fire zones against an offensive line, their job becomes easier, because now they know they're not thinking as much. They're not seeing all these different blitz looks. And because they're not thinking as much, now they're just playing. And that makes an offensive lineman better as well.
Wants and needs, right, in life. And with football teams going into free agency, Cardinals had a need at both tackles. And so, Levi Brown is a guy coming back. Adam Snyder is the newcomer, the marquee guy they got in free agency so far. And it was interesting to go into a film session with Mike Miller on the Cardinals flight plan, which you can find on azcardinals.com. You can find a version of that. And having Mike Miller, Cardinals offensive coordinator, take us through some of the game film on Adam Snyder, because they just spent the last 5 years or so going against the guy twice a year. And it was interesting, as he pointed out, you know, I mean, there's basically three elements to his game. There's the intelligence, you know, there's the versatility, and then there's the athleticism slash disposition. You know, they showed some, okay, this is a mean guy up front. He plays with it with an intensity.
Love him.
And it was interesting to go through the film session. Were you struck by anything just talking, you know, with Adam Snyder? You had a little bit of time with the media,
you know,
on him.
It was real. It's been real brief with him. You know, he just started coming back around the complex. I will say this. Not talking to him, but talking to some other people. You know, I know that this team took some shots in terms of that was their splashy free agent, that was the guy they went after, and that's the offensive lineman, et cetera, et cetera. But that was the guy they wanted. And, you know, we'll find out if it turned out to be the right choice. But the reality is they had a guy that they really, really wanted to get in free agency, and that was him. I've been told he had multiple chances to go other places. It played into their favor that his wife is from around here. Actually, his wife is the daughter of a former Cardinal front office employee. And she grew up 3 miles here from the complex, and he really wanted to be here, and I think that helped them in the process. But they really, really wanted Adam Snyder. Now, he is versatile. I think he could play right tackle if they wanted him to. There's no question that the game plan right now is to put him at right guard, and I think that's where they want him. But that's a guy who they really targeted, and so for them to get that, I think they're happy about it.
Of course, there was another name in free agency that they targeted who did not end up here in Tempe, and that was Peyton Manning. And I'll just say this, you guys can weigh in on this, and yeah, this could be another 4-hour conversation on the heels of Levi Brown, but having played golf last week with a guy who broke the majority of the stories on Peyton Manning out of Denver, and a guy who got a call from Peter King, of all people, congratulating him for being the lead on the story nationwide, I really think it came down to one thing, based on what I learned from him, and that is just a relationship quarterback to quarterback between Peyton Manning and John Elway. Somehow, some way, that moved the meter in a big way with Peyton Manning, and that ultimately got it done, just that relationship. Elway looking him in the eye and saying, hey, I was at your age, and we won 2 Super Bowls. I know what it takes, and, you know, give me a chance. But Peyton Manning was walking these same hallways, you know, less than a month ago. So what do you think in terms of the current quarterbacks on the Cardinals roster, Kevin Cobb and, you know, John Skelton, et cetera? I mean, where do you think they go from here, well, Darren? And
I think that's the big question right now. I mean, I think John Skelton is going to be John Skelton. I don't think anything really phases him.
Agreed.
At this point, partly because of his personality and partly because of, you know, where you come from. You're a 5th-round pick. Anything he's been able to do, quite frankly, has been bonus. And he had success last year in terms of wins and losses that he can kind of build on a little bit. Obviously, Kevin Cobb's a different situation. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, where he's going to be mentally, everything. I kind of go back and forth on that. I mean, on one side, and I feel pretty strongly about this, you know, he took the $7 million bonus that they gave him. And so if he's going to take it, you know, anything beyond that, do you really want to hear from him? I mean, if you're going to take the money, obviously you're okay with the situation. That being said, we're all human. Peyton Manning is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You absolutely got to take a look at him if you think he wants to come here and you fit. I think on a rational level, Kevin understands that. But everybody is going to get hurt a little bit. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't and not be human. So it'll be curious to know how he reacts. And again, how, going back to the original pre-Peyton Manning narrative, which is how an entire offseason will help him become a better quarterback, because he's got to play better than he did last year.
Is it motivating or is it deflating, I guess, is my question, you know, when it comes to Kevin Cobb.
I got 3 thoughts on this, Paulie. Number one, we're talking about Peyton Manning here. It's not like they were trying to bring in Matt Hasselbeck. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they're trying to bring in some guy and some retread maybe, and, oh, we really want to go after Matt Hasselbeck, and I don't mean to throw Matt Hasselbeck under the bus at all, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're talking about Peyton Manning here. We are talking about not a franchise quarterback, but from where I'm sitting right now, the franchise quarterback in the National Football League, the prototypical franchise guy in the NFL that every guy is going to be compared to that comes out of college now. It'll be compared against Peyton Manning. He is prototypical through and through in every way that you could possibly want. So that's number one. They took a shot going after a huge name in Peyton Manning and a guy that I think will still be able to play for the next 4 or 5 years. Number two, I'll say this. If this does impact Kevin Cobb negatively because they went after the franchise quarterback in the NFL, he wasn't the guy to begin with. He was not the right guy that you need to lead this organization to begin with if he's going to turn into a puddle because you went after Peyton Manning. Number three, I think this is going to have a positive impact on Kevin Cobb. I think this is going to toughen him up a little bit. Not that I think he's soft right now, but Kevin Cobb, you look at his career and you look what he's had to deal with, the whole Michael Vick situation and Peyton Manning. At some point in time, you wanted to say something, Dave?
I was going to say even last year with John Skelton.
Last year.
I know he was hurt, but
yes.
People started saying John Skelton, they're still saying John Skelton.
Absolutely, and we're going to have, I believe, a quarterback competition in Flagstaff. So all of this, Kevin Cobb at some point has got to sink or swim. Kevin Cobb at some point has got to say, I am the guy that not only one team but two franchises, including Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles, believed he was. I am that guy. He's got to grab the job by the horns, for lack of a better way of saying it, and go out and be that guy. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to toughen him up, and especially the quarterback competition that is looming up in Flagstaff, and it's going to start before that with the OTAs. I think this is going to be good for Kevin Cobb. Nobody's going to hand him anything. He's going to have to take it. And if he's going to take it, it's going to be because he's a tough guy, and that toughness comes from inside. I think it will have a positive effect on him.
You know what's somewhat ironical, as somebody once said, is that the very first practice he participated in at Flagstaff last year, what was it, 4 or 5 days he had to miss, right, because of the whole lockout thing. The takeaway from all the offensive linemen and the guys in the offensive huddle was, oh, great, we finally have a leader. We have a commander. I vividly remember talking to O lineman. He came in, and from the moment he entered that huddle, they're like, okay, he's in charge. And so I'm curious if he can recapture that, because like you said, well, he needs to. And if he isn't that guy, if he isn't able to get back to that point where he demands and commands the respect of everyone else on that offense, then you're right. He's not the guy.
See, and that's where it comes down to, and this is where it's funny when we analyze personality types and all this stuff, and not that it doesn't mean anything. I do believe Kevin Cobb can be a leader. But if you go out on the field and when the ball is snapped, you can't complete passes or you're getting sacked, it doesn't matter what kind of personality you have. We've all come across people that actually are good leaders, but because they can't actually perform when the rubber meets the road, what does it matter? And that's where it comes down to.
Was he the quarterback in the 6-game slide, or was he the quarterback in the second half against Dallas? A guy who finally seemed to understand the system. And I think maybe that's the untold story. You guys can agree or disagree from 2011, is that the offensive system that Kevin Cobb, the more and more I talk to the offensive coaches, was so radically different here than in Philadelphia. He was so accustomed to the 3- and 5-step drop, a single read, get rid of the ball. And here it's much different, and you understand it on a much different level than I do, Wolf, but it was just a very different skill set that he had to adapt to, and I think it was a slower process for him than they anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just say this for the record, and this is just me, and I've been wrong many times before in the past, and I'll continue to be wrong as we go forward, but it's my opinion. I'm more concerned about Kevin Cobb's ability right now to stay on the field as a quarterback in the National Football League than I am about his ability to be a quarterback in the National Football League. I think Kevin Cobb is a guy. I think of the first two games he played here. He played well in the first two games for the Arizona Cardinals. He played very well in that Dallas game, of course, brought them back in that game. And, you know, he's only only scratching the surface, I think, of what he can do. But the entire team, never forget, the entire team over the last half of last season was a different team than what we saw in the first half. And I think the OTAs, or the lack thereof, and the lockout, I think it really, really hurt one guy, not only the entire team, but one guy in particular, and that was Kevin Cobb. Coming from that new system, the West Coast system of Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles, coming here where it's a more conceptual offense, very fluid, very flexible offense, something that I thought Peyton Manning would have fit into perfectly, but I digress. Okay, to me, it was a huge philosophical difference for Kevin Cobb, and I think we saw that tactically on the field.
So Wolf believes it'll be a quarterback competition. I believe it'll be a quarterback competition at Flagstaff. Kevin Cobb does have to prove himself as a starter. What believes you, Darren Urban?
I agree. I mean, I don't see how it wouldn't be. Although I do think in the end, I agree that with Wolf, to the point that I think Cobb will respond well. And I do think that Cobb will end up being the starter on this team. And the question will become, you know, might he get hurt again? And obviously the bigger thing is, could he get concussed again? And that's the thing you got to be worried about. But I do think when it all sorts itself out, that Cobb is going to find a way to be that quarterback once we get into the season.
All right, so if we're still calling roll and we're talking about guys with a history of being injured and guys who signed on the line that are dotted that are coming back, Early Doucette. So, all right, maybe a word on Early Doucette, and are they still in the market for another receiver right now?
I don't think there's any question about that. I think whether it's, you know, where we are in the timeline and the calendar, I think it's more likely that it becomes a drafted guy. So that makes somebody like Doucette as a veteran more important. But I don't think there's any question that they're still looking for another person, a number two person. You know, they kind of looked around a little bit in the free agent market. I'm not going to rule out, no matter what's happened with the offensive line, I'm not going to rule out the possibility of a receiver with a first round pick. And I think we'll see what goes. But I do think that, you know, bringing Doucette back is an important cog in there, especially when you look beyond Doucette and Andre Roberts, what they have down the depth chart. I think there's a lot of unproven guys there that it's good to bring Early back.
I really like Early Doucette as a number three. I really do like him. I think, again, you know, this is a guy that can work in the slot, run all the routes that you need him to do. He's a guy that, for the most part, has been dependable. Now, he's had a couple of high-profile drops, and we all know the drops I'm talking about, but overall, I think he's a very solid number three receiver, and I like that. I think there are four primary needs on this team, and in no particular order. I think it's offensive line, either a tackle and leave Adam Snyder at tackle, or a guard and maybe kick Adam Snyder out to right tackle. They need an offensive lineman. I think they need an outside linebacker. I think they need that pass rusher, that marquee guy. Sam Macho, O'Brien Schofield, my goodness, did these two young guys really make huge strides last year. But I still think they need that guy, and boy, would Ray Horton's defense be that much more effective if they can find a bona fide pass rusher to insert into that defense. I think they need a safety, and I think they need a wide receiver. I think those four things right there. Now, the one thing I can guarantee is that if the Cardinals can't trade out of that 13th spot, they will take the best player available. I think within the realm of those four positions, they're going to take the guy they believe in. That is dogma now with this organization, and will be going forward, that they will take the best player available.
And if you doubt that, just look at Ryan Williams a year ago. I think that was proven.
Bingo.
Yeah, big time. So a safety, a needed safety, a guy who played a lot of safety last year was Richard Marshall, Darren, and he was called the defensive MVP at the end of the season. He is not coming back. He has signed elsewhere. William Gay has come in as a defensive back, and a corner Does he compete for the starting job, William Gay? What do we know? Where do you think he fits in on the depth chart?
I do think there's a chance he could compete because I think there's so many unknowns across from Patrick Peterson. I mean, I think they have high hopes for Greg Toler, who's been rehabbing his blown-out knee. But let's face it, he's coming off a blown-out knee. So there's questions over where he's going to be, especially when the season starts. Same with A.J. Jefferson. They haven't given up on A.J. Jefferson. They still believe in A.J. Jefferson, but AJ's got to play a lot better than he did last year to have a chance to be a starter. So then you have Gay, who has been a starter in this league, but would fit in as a third guy if need be. I think I like how that possibility goes. And, you know, let's face it, although I think Michael Adams has done great job on special teams, and that's something that they got to be very careful about, you know, as a fourth corner, you know, maybe you wouldn't mind having somebody with more size. So if you have Jefferson and Gay and Toler and Peterson, maybe that works better. I think having options back in the secondary, we all saw how important that was to Ray Horton last year. You know, Richard Marshall. And again, quickly to clarify, the Richard Marshall is my MVP comment by Ray Horton. He made it clear at the time, which gets glossed over because it's a lot easier to just say Richard Marshall was a defensive MVP. He made it clear at the time is I am calling him the MVP because of the versatility he was able to allow me to work with.
Ding, ding,
ding. It wasn't that he was absolutely the best player on the field. It was because of the things he was able to do, I could move other people around, and that is why he was my MVP. And I think people have lost sight of why he was called that and want to say, well, he was the best player. I mean, Calais Campbell was the defensive MVP last year. Let's not get things mixed up.
He put the valuable into MVP.
Yes.
And because of the situation, yes, the loss of Kerry Rhodes and the, yes, injury situation, that's why. The versatility, yes, and et cetera. Okay. All right. I'm following that. And this might be the next podcast, right? Next edition of Cardinals Underground. But if we're looking for breakout players 2012, Wolf, I'm beating you to Rob Hauser. I'm just going to tell you right now.
Oh, you,
it's my Paul Pigskin breakout player at camp. I'm just going to go to Rob Hauser right now.
You know what? I'm going to reserve. I'm going to hold back my breakout player of the year. All right, Paulie? Yeah, I'm going to do that. Maybe, yeah, because, Ryan Williams. Okay, Paul.
Wait,
you know what? You go with Rob Hauser.
Hang on.
I'm
now
going to go with Ryan Williams. Mm-mm.
Yeah, he looked good. Oh, my gosh, did he look good for those 2 weeks in camp a year ago. Oh,
absolutely. Boy. Yeah, he really did. He made a statement up there, and it was interesting because anytime you hear the veterans start talking about a player like that, especially a rookie, anytime you hear the veterans, you're 4 days into camp, and all of a sudden you hear veterans, man, you see that? That tells me everything I need to know. That kid can play.
Who's going to look the best in the new Nike gear, by the way? You know, what do you think of the new Nike gear? You know, Darren, what are they saying on the message boards about the new Nike gear?
It's funny because I was in the locker room after this was announced, and I was talking to Lyle Senline about it, who didn't really know a whole bunch. And I said, yeah.
That's why I love Darren, by the way, the name dropping. He just had me talking to Lyle Senline about the Nike gear.
I mentioned the fact that it's lighter and it's going to be a little more snug. And he looked at me and he goes, I don't need any more snug. I don't need it more tight. Right. He goes, I struggle with it as tight as it was anyway. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I know people were disappointed that, you know, it wasn't some kind of massive change, but I think we kind of knew that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. And the black alternate jerseys, they stay, right? I mean, that's going to be part of it. Thumbs up from Holmes over there. He's all over that. So, all right, Wolf. Just
love the black jerseys.
Don't let Nike put you in anything with stripes, Wolf. That won't serve you well. Let's just put that on game day. Okay?
All right, Paul, that's going to cost you.
Okay. All right. Ron Wolfley, Darren Irvin, I'm Paul Calvisi, Jim Omohundro over there. Yes, it is Cardinals Underground here 2012 on azcardinals.com.